You could connect another individual to an investor. You could be, you know, a bird dog where you're bringing the deals. You could, you know, come to my business and possibly make six figures just by doing TC work, you know, or working part-time. There's so many different ways to make money in real estate.
Welcome to today's episode of Nursing Real Wealth, where we have the privilege of hosting Kimberly Mihalik. With an extensive 21-year career in nursing and a remarkable 31 years in healthcare, Kimberly brings a wealth of experience and insight to our discussion today. Beyond her nursing background, Kimberly is a seasoned entrepreneur, or in her words, nursepreneur, with a track record of launching and managing successful startups. She has also recently embarked on several new endeavors within the real estate investing realm, dedicating significant attention to mastering top-tier transaction coordination and developing expertise in methods of investing popularized by Pace Morby, such as the Gator Method and Sub2. Her accomplishments extend to a thriving Airbnb venture and a deepening understanding of private money lending dynamics. Adding to her impressive portfolio, Kimberly is a CPR instructor deeply committed to preventing cardiac deaths in youth. She is also an accomplished author, a certified wellness and life coach, and a dedicated advocate for wellness through seminars and personal coaching. Kimberly's passion for service is evident through her involvement in the Mihalik Mountain Ministry, which focuses on impactful medical and local missions. Notably, she is also a two-time finisher of the half marathon, while gracefully managing the responsibilities of being a devoted mother to two teenagers. Kimberly, it is a pleasure to have you. We're going to have a blast today. Welcome.
Thank you so much for that amazing introduction. And first off, Justin, I would like to thank you for having me on your second episode. The name is amazing, From Codes to Contracts. Like, that was so clever. And also to congratulate you. You are a full-time W-2 worker as a nurse and a father and a husband. And that right there exhausts me. So you're smashing it in this industry. So I just wanted to take a minute to congratulate you and just thank you. I'm honored to be here.
Thank you. Yes. Sometimes I wonder why I keep taking on more, but you know, so far the Lord has allowed me to be able to somehow manage that. So let's kind of kick this off with, why don't you tell us just a little bit about your background? Obviously, I kind of set a little bit of a tone sharing some of your background, but tell us about your background and, you know, maybe some of your favorite nursing jobs that you've done over the course of your career.
Okay. Well, I've been in healthcare for 31 years. It started off actually when I was 15 years old, before regulations were in play with group homes. And I actually started off in an AFC, adult foster care, taking care of disabled individuals. Four out of the six were in wheelchairs, and we needed to provide 24/7 care with bathing and ADLs, everyday living skills. And by the ripe age of 16, I got to start driving them around and taking them on outings. And it just morphed from that into getting into a vocational training program in my high school for medical assisting. That medical assisting training got me into the University of Michigan as an MA in the operating room. So here I am, very young, being in one of the best institutions in the country, working around amazing, talented people. And I just always had those nurses and doctors take an interest because they saw that I was interested in all things, you know, medical, and that I wanted to become a nurse. And so I had some amazing mentorships throughout the University of Michigan. And then I went to nursing school and became a nurse. And 21 years later, here I am on your podcast talking about it.
So obviously, you know, you've moved from nursing, and you've not moved from it, but you're still doing nursing, but you're also doing some additional entrepreneur kind of endeavors. Mm-hmm. What's sort of the impetus for going that route?
So a couple things. It actually started with my third half Ironman that I did on my 46th birthday. So it was a race of 70.3 miles of swimming, biking, and running. And on paper, I know, right? It's ridiculous. on paper shouldn't have finished, because at the time I didn't know that I had a genetic disorder called Ehlers-Danlos and lupus and MCAS and POTS and all this crazy, you know, stuff going on. So for 7 hours, 50 minutes and 55 seconds, I felt the Lord, and I just felt so at peace. It was a time of misery and just amazement what my body could do at the time, being not really trained up for that race. And I just was going through a lot of storms in my life, and I just knew I needed to be there to be closer to the Lord. And so I decided to just buy a house and decide I'm going to start an Airbnb without knowing what I'm doing. And this after being in a very compromising position. I was actually the director of nursing at a 103-bed facility and had, you know, I don't know how many employees I had. And I was put in a very compromising position to, they basically wanted me to fudge a few things. And I just did not feel comfortable doing that. And so I packed up my office and I left. And I said to myself, the next time that I do any kind of nursing, I will be owning the facility. So here I am.
There you go. You know, we have talked together a couple of times about an interesting trend in nursing, that nursing in particular is seeing an uptick in, I guess, burnout is the word that everybody likes to use. I don't love that word because it sort of infers a problem with you as the nurse, like you're not handling something, when really, if you're seeing a statistically significant trend, it's not the nurse mishandling their own stress. It's something that is wrong. And so, you know, I remember you had mentioned a statistic related to this trend and how soon nurses are leaving the field. Mm-hmm. As opposed, you've been a nurse for 21 years. We're not seeing that trend today, right?
Correct.
Do you want to share a little bit about that?
You know, Justin, I really think it's a lot of different things, but I think it comes from the lack of accountability for decades. It started back when I was a nurse that the patient ratio was never where it needed to be for safe care. And then combined with less resources, less tools to actually do your job. I mean, when I was working as a nurse on the midnight shift, oftentimes we didn't have a clerk. We didn't have an aide or a pharmacy tech. Like, I recovered open heart patients right from the OR. So I had fresh open heart patients that weren't even 12 hours post-op. And, you know, if you needed a drip, guess what? You better know the ratio because you're drawing it up yourself. You know, if someone extubates themselves and a chest tube comes out, you better have your squad ready to, you know, you better have everything in your pockets ready to go, because the ancillary staff just was not there. And that's been going on for decades. And then you add on just the vile environment in which we're placed. I mean, as a nurse, I've been kicked, punched, slapped, bitten. I was kicked pregnant with my firstborn son at forgot how many weeks. Like, this lady said she wanted to kill my baby and me. Like, so this was going on decades ago. And then you combine it now with the pandemic and the crisis and staffing and just the expectations that hotels are kind of like hospitals, and you just create this really horrible environment that you're supposed to perform in and then do it with a smile. And then now they're holding nurses, you know, at a Fed level if you make a mistake, and all while not paying you a livable wage with how the prices are going up with the recession and everything else with the market. So I'm seeing more and more people walking away from the field completely because of this. And it's just sad, because I think it's just a buildup of a lot of problems that were never addressed. And then combined with the forced vaccinations and having to put stuff in your body that you, you know, don't necessarily align with. Like, I remember I've had a reaction to a flu shot. I was a migrant outreach nurse, one of my favorite jobs of all times. So I would be on the farms of Southwest Michigan, like MASH, setting up a clinic, got chickens running around and, you know, got swatting mosquitoes and stuff. And they made me get a flu shot, even though I was seasonal. Like, I wasn't even working, but they still mandated because they had federal money for me to get something that I had allergic reaction to. So like, where is enough is enough? Like, you have no autonomy in a field that you're supposed to be greatly valued and respected. And so I just think it's all of those things that are coming together, and people are like, I'd rather work at a winery or wait tables or work at Home Depot versus getting punched, slapped, and kicked, and then having, you know, your health dictated by, you know, hospital personnel that actually is not in they're not in the front lines of what we're doing. And then exposing ourselves then to, you know, diseases and viruses, that things that can kill us. Like for us, COVID is COVID. Like, I'm more scared of bed bugs or scabies, you know? I mean, so it's one of those things where do you draw the line between having rights as an American and being told what you, you know, need to do on top of all the other, you know, portions of it, and then the pay. I mean, and most nurses are impasse, and most choose, you know, passion over profit. But at this point in our world, we don't have the bandwidth to do that any longer.
Yep. I know for me, I was a supervisor, and we ended up becoming a primary COVID unit for the PCU level patients. And a PCU level patient during COVID times was really a patient who needed to be in the ICU, but there wasn't enough space. And so what we were running into was situations where everybody was intubated, that absolutely needed to be intubated. And then we had additional folks that really needed to be intubated, but there was no space to intubate. So we had to figure out how to go and manage that. That's not necessarily to blame anybody at a hospital level. Mm-hmm. That was just how bad it got. But this is something that really burned me and got me to the point where I was like, I need to be able to make money in another way. It's not that I'm leaving nursing completely right now, but I need to be able to make money in a way that is good with my conscience. And what I struggled with was in the last surge of 2021, we got to the point where the surge was so bad. And I, as a supervisor, was directly involved in taking care of a lot of these patients. And what I would watch is we'd go and put them on remdesivir, and these patients would just decompensate rapidly. And we'd throw these patients into acute kidney injury. And I remember I went to my primary doctor with symptoms of PTSD after this. And he's like, yeah, you got PTSD. This is crazy. And, you know, we got talking about it, and I told him that we were using remdesivir still. And he was like, I find that alarming that you're still using remdesivir, right? Because every single one of my patients who has survived hospitalization and was treated with remdesivir is now being treated with kidney failure. And he's like, I think that was probably why you were struggling. You had put the two pieces together in your mind, and we're still sorting all of that out right now, but you had put that together. As a nurse, you put that together, and there was something wrong. And as a Christian, you were struggling with the morality of what you were having to engage in when you felt that it was not maybe the right choice for the patient. And so, yeah, that led me down the road of having to go and leave my primary role just to recover for a little bit. So I moved into a different role in nursing. And then I've been exploring another way to go and make money, just to make sure that I have other avenues. Should I ever be called to do something that doesn't work with my conscience, I want to be able to have another out. So here we are. Here we are. We're both pursuing real estate. We're both still nurses, but we're both pursuing real estate, you know? Mm-hmm. So, you know, why don't you share maybe some of your successes or failures that you've experienced kind of along this real estate journey? What's gone well? What's not gone well? I always appreciate when people tell what hasn't gone well, because what you see online is often what went well.
Right. Well, you know, I don't have failure in my vocabulary, because like, failure to me is when you stop doing something. And as an endurance athlete, and as a nurse, and as a mom, I just don't stop. So I will take that word and say, okay, that was an opportunity for that obstacle for me to dominate it. But my first house was the beast of all investments, like after Ironman and after quitting walking off of my six-figure job as a nurse, you know, as a DON, which would have looked amazing for leadership, like on my resume. But again, I had that like, I can't do this. Like, you want me to operate already shady style. I can't align with that. And so after that, I was like, I have to make this business work. And my Airbnb was very successful. It's a seasonal town in northern Michigan, so very touristy. The first year was great. The second year was even better. I had close to $30,000 worth of bookings, not even like 50% booked. But then the seasons and storms in my life with the separation from my husband of, you know, 20 years led me to be like, okay, I don't feel comfortable as a newbie investor having this buy and hold. I need to figure out my exit strategy so I can pivot. So that's when I decided to actually put the house up for sale. Before I was actually in any mentorship. So I put it up for sale, got it under contract, fell through for lending. The second one was a woman just like me. It was her dream to run an Airbnb and she loved the area, was from Detroit, got it under contract the 9th day out of 10th of the inspection. She waits to the last minute to call the village and the village was like, oh, we don't have short-term rentals here. And we're like, So that was like calling senators, getting the National Association of Realtors involved, having council meetings and rallying the other Airbnb troops, because you had one person that wanted to monopolize and monetize off of one section of M22, but didn't want anyone else to be in on the game. And so then now I'm stuck with a non-performing asset, right? I'm not really working because at this point I have all my eggs in one basket. So I was like, what am I going to do now? So thankfully I was able to find an end buyer, but that end buyer was risky. It was a FHA. They came from a really interesting background and they didn't have seasoned money. And I didn't think that they were going to be able to get to the closing table. And my now business partner, Frank's like, you know, you need to kill this deal and we need to do creative financing. I was like, let's go. So I was able to pivot and get it under a land contract and then wrap that. And so hopefully within 2 years, they can now take that seasoned money and go ahead and get, you know, financed for their own loan. And I think that's the thing that people don't realize in real estate is that there are so many ways to help people out in this business. You can take your asset that you own and take a risk and give it to somebody else that is a hard worker, that, you know, their bosses can vouch for them, that they're there every day and that he will be their safety net or save someone from, you know, foreclosure and save their credit. So there's just so many ways to pivot in real estate. It's just knowing your exit strategies, knowing if it's a good deal or not, and being able to, you know, pivot with the market and how, you know, the numbers are looking with travel. And then after that, I was a little bit kind of nervous about short-term rentals. So now I'm more getting into like midterm rentals and long-term rentals, because when it comes down to it, if a village or a township makes an ordinance, there's really little that you can do. And if you don't know how to exit out of that, then you get into trouble and you can over-leverage yourself very quickly, for sure.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's cliche when it's like mindset, but really that's what it is. And I think as nurses, we have a foot in because we know how it is to persevere through difficult situations, to remain calm. I mean, how many times I've been on code teams, I've had to do chest compressions on someone and then let the person die and walk in like, hi, I'm Kimberly, I'm going to be your nurse tonight. Mm-hmm. You know, like, so we have the means to be high performing in a high stress industry. And that's kind of what investing is. And if you can harvest those different talents that you've had in nursing and then apply them in a different way and, you know, find something that you can provide a solution to a problem and then learn how to market and then monetize off that, you're golden. Rinse and repeat. That's all it is.
For nurses that often feel, or that may feel trapped. I mean, I realize this isn't the case for every nurse. There are some nurses that maybe are really thriving in their field, and that's excellent. But I do run across a lot of nurses that feel either trapped because they spend all this time and effort learning their role as a nurse, and they feel like that's the only way they know how to make money.
Sure.
So for nurses that maybe feel trapped in their current career, what advice or what insights would you offer to help them realize there might be viable options for either change or just growth of their income?
Well, I think that taking it from the realm of real estate investing, you with the baby boomers retiring and actually so used to working within their business, there's so many businesses that are being, you know, sold right now because, you know, they've created them to work within them, not to actually scale and to sell. So I feel like right now you have the best opportunities to be able to monetize and monopolize off that industry that's happening with, you know, what is it, 10,000 people are turning 70 years old every single day. If you utilize the resources that are out there, like free YouTubes, mentorships, hooking up and networking with other people, you can do so much creative financing, whether it's like with a car or a house or a business. And if you know how to work that, and I mean, most nurses are social, right? We know how to network. We're great problem solvers. We're good under pressure. Like, so just take all that and then move it over. Like I said previously, find a problem, get a solution to it, and then figure out how to market it. And, you know, you're golden, whether that's real estate or a business or anything else. I mean, even sometimes taking like little side hustles or things that you're, you know, passionate about, turn that passion into profit by utilizing the skills that made you that powerhouse nurse. Just apply them in a different way that makes sense to you and your situation at hand. And maybe it's not being like me where it's like the Iron Man of like investing where you're putting everything in one basket. Maybe it's just cutting down your hours and focusing so many hours on your business and learning how to structure your business with a trust so that way you can reap the tax benefits. I mean, that's what I did. I studied what the rich do for almost 6 months. And I realized it's not that, you know, the 1% of people that are millionaires, they don't have college educations. They're creative and they have a lot of endurance to, you know, weather the storms. And if you can combine those two with your passion and structure it in a way that you can, you know, have a tax write-off for your house because you have a home business and then your car and then all the other good things. Like there is a reason why the rich are where they're at. And if you're like you and I that want to be kingdom builders and use our wealth to help the community and build up God's kingdom, well, this is one of the ways to do it, to use what we have, but do it in a way that makes sense, that we can have our money constantly working for us in a different manner versus trading our time for a paycheck. So I guess it all just depends on your mindset. Not everyone is meant to be leaders and to be running a business, but a lot of times you can then, you know, hook up with another, you know, entrepreneur or a business person and learn from them while you're trying to figure it all out. That's what I did. I didn't have my business partners right away. It took me close to 6 to 8 months to, you know, find my squad. But in the meantime, you can constantly be progressing forward to that goal.
There's so many free resources that are available. You can go and look on so many different podcasts. We talked about that in my last episode that, you know, you can go and find Bigger Pockets. You can find Pace Morby. Tons of great resources. Be careful who you listen to because there's some, there's some scammers out there. Those are two that I recommend, Bigger Pockets and Pace Morby. Those are two phenomenal opportunities. Also, Ryan Pineda. He's a phenomenal guy to take a listen to. And Ryan Pineda also will take not only the real estate side, but he really gets into the business side of things as well. So it's very, he's a very, very good resource. But yeah, I think nurses actually have a phenomenal opportunity to potentially go and do something on the side. Many nurses, you know, work 12-hour shifts and it's 3 days a week. And then the rest of the week, they could go and spend learning another business or something. And it's a way that they could either replace their nursing income if they need to get out of nursing for their for their welfare. Or if they just want to increase their income and end up with a little bit of a better retirement prospect, you know,
that part,
this is one way to go. Yeah. I think that's an important thing to think about when you think about the retirement funds as they're structured today, right? Mm-hmm. I think the traditional was a great idea in time past, right? So you're talking about either investing in a 401k or a Roth IRA, you're really lucky to go and get what is it, 6 to 8% on average in the stock market? Right. 6 to 8%. Okay, so 6 to 8%. Inflation is currently sitting at 15 reported. It's probably even higher. So you're not outpacing inflation with your 401k right now. You're losing. So the current structures of 401ks, that's what I started doing the math. I was like, wait a minute. My cost of living is going up way faster than my 401k is gaining. Mm-hmm. That's not going to bode well for me when I'm older if I'm going to continue making the income that I'm making right now. Plus, when you go and look at, you know, I was talking, I think it was on the first podcast, we mentioned the topic of the fact that, you know, cost of living has gone up just astronomically, you know, upwards of like 20-fold over the last few years for many different areas since the 1970s, it's gone up like 20-fold.
Wow.
And the cost and the income levels have only gone up about 6-fold. That's going to be a problem down the road. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I had to figure out, okay, so how are other people doing this? There are obviously people killing it, but it's certainly not the mainstream. It's not the standard rhetoric. It's not the standard plan of action that I've been fed my whole life. So I had to go and dig in and figure it out myself. So, you know, that's kind of what ended up landing me on real estate. How about you? How did you end up landing primarily on real estate versus, like, I don't know, I always wonder this, why real estate versus, say, individual stocks or stock trading or something like that? I mean, those are different things you hear people kind of throw around there. What are some reasons that it would be real estate over that for you?
For me, it's combining the hard asset. Like, regardless what happens, you still have a hard asset, just like with gold or silver. So to me, a lot of the answers are in the Bible. Like, it says clearly in the Bible not to stockpile, but you might want to invest in coins and you might want to invest in land, right? So when I'm praying and fasting, I just look for, you know, discernment. And again, being on that course of, you know, you against the course for 7 hours and some change, you really start to learn a lot about yourself and really start to listen to the Lord in all kinds of different ways. And so for me, it's combining that hard asset with the ability to pivot if something happens. You can always, you know, lease, you can run it out midterm, long-term. You can do a care home, which is stuff that I'm passionate about right now, is combining my nursing with real estate and a business. There's different ways around it, you know, unlike Bitcoin or any of the other kind of stocks that can, you know, go up and down. You actually have a hard asset to back that, you know, against, even if it's, you know, not a good performing one, you can't make up more land. And we all know China is buying up all the land. Like, just in mid-Michigan, they bought that huge, you know, farmland to go ahead and build batteries. Like, they're not you can't create more land, just like you can't create time. So to me, I like to always be secured, like in a good position, you know, and to me, that made sense with real estate. And it just went and connected back with my walk with God, is I felt his presence and I felt like he was, you know, for whatever reason, he was guiding me towards that. And I had all my friends tell me that I was crazy, that I was going to fail, and I didn't know business. And so you had mentioned a lot of unlearning, and that's what a lot of this process is that you are breaking out from the mold, and people are going to say that you're off your rocker and that you're not making sound, you know, choices, because it is different. Like, why would you listen to some dude Pace Morby and do creative financing and all this other, you know, nonsense? But again, that's why it's so important to align yourself with people that are doing, you know, the same thing that you are. And like you said, don't listen to everybody. Not everybody, you know, has good advice, and they will steer you down the wrong way. And so that's why it's really important to know who's in your corner. I had to go through a lot of, you know, breakups per se, because I realized that I was surrounded by a lot of negative people that were bringing me down. And I don't take advice anymore from people that aren't, you know, doing more than I am or at a different level, because you always need to surround yourself in rooms with people that are more advanced. Like, when I was training for an Ironman, I didn't run with people that were my same pace. I ran with the people faster than me, and I didn't know the route, so I didn't have a choice. There's a strategy behind my madness, Justin.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's the scripture says there's wisdom in a multitude of counselors, but be wise, in my mind, be wise who those counselors are. It doesn't mean that you just randomly select a few counselors. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You need to think about where, you know, my pastor, you know, said in regard to marriage, well, where do you want to go with your marriage? Who do you want to be like in your marriage? Well, you want to go and look at godly couples that are functioning in a way that you want to function in your marriage. How do you want your children to turn out? Well, look at families who have children that turned out the way that you want them to. And so, you know, when it comes to finances, that also applies. Mm-hmm. If there's nobody around you that is going the direction you want to do with your finances, you're going to have to look outside of who you are around. You might look mm-hmm. to those people for good advice in regard to just how they raise their kids, but maybe they're not in the position that you want to be in financially. So mm-hmm. choose your battles, choose what you're going to take from the crowd that you're around. And financially, it'd be wise to go and look at the people that are accomplishing what you want to accomplish. So
yeah, right. So yeah.
You have to surround yourself with people. How are you investing in real estate now? You've mentioned a couple of times the creative finance thing, and you know, what are mm-hmm. your future plans too?
So that's a loaded question. So I'm a visionary. That's my avatar. So I am very diverse in investing. And I don't know if it's because of my background, like I need to feel secure. But like currently I'm doing some private money lending on fix and flips in a secured position, or providing, you know, transactional chunks to open up escrow. I have, you know, the house in Northern Michigan under the land contract. And most recently, I partnered up with my business partner, Frank and Tina. Frank's from New York and Tina is from Vegas. And we're very different. Our strengths, you know, help out our weaknesses. And our LLC is now top tier certified for transaction coordinating. So what our goal is we're all investors and we all have different interests, but you know, investors are very busy and oftentimes they don't have the bandwidth or the patience to see the transaction from beginning to close. And I don't know if you know this, but about 70% of creative financing deals, they don't close, you know, whether it's sub-2, hybrid, Morby method, novation. So you have a high probability of not getting to the closing table because, you know, once you open escrow, sometimes you see clouds on the title. They might be in arrears, or they might have liens or bad child support, like talking to title and attorneys or whoever we need to discuss, you know, problems with to keep it moving forward, while then the investor can go ahead and move on to the next deal. So the goal is to then bring other people on. So we're not actually working in the business, but we're managing the business. But it also gave me a different viewpoint on being an investor of how, you know, delicate this process is, because I've always had a TC on all my deals and they're worth every penny. So it's a really neat opportunity to see the other side of it. And two, that's where nurses can come in and use their superpowers as, you know, I think everyone is under the impression that real estate investing is about wholesaling or fix and flips or buy and holds, but really there's so much to it. You could connect another individual to an investor. You could be, you know, a bird dog where you're bringing the deals. You could, you know, come to my business and possibly make six figures just by doing TC work, you know, or working part-time. There's so many different ways to make money in real estate. I don't really think people understand the opportunities. And then like me, I'm interested in care homes. And so my goal would be to open up residential assisted living. And if I get tired of the business because of whatever's going on, or maybe I have like a health problem or something going on with my boys, I can always sell the business and then still keep the real estate and lease out, you know, the real estate. I mean, the silver tsunami is here. I mean, we're I checked. First, it said 500,000. Well, that was like 2 years ago. We're 1.2 million beds short for residential assisted living for seniors. And so it's not a matter if, it's like when. It's here, it's coming. So if I can, you know, provide a solution to a problem, and it's coming from a nursing background of care, then that's amazing. And then to combine it with sober living where you're providing a single family home to someone coming right out of recovery so they have a safe place to, you know, get back into society. These are things that we can use our nursing background, because we are in a serving kind of hospitality / science, you know, industry. We can utilize all those skills and then apply it in other ways. And so again, there's just so many different ways that you can, you know, make money in this field. It's just making sure, like you said, that you're aligning with the right people and you're listening to the, you know, correct information that's being thrown out there. And I mean, there's opportunities galore for sure in this field. And it's exciting because, again, you are helping people sometimes at very vulnerable times. They might be going through a divorce, or maybe they have a health scare. Maybe they had a death in the family and they just can no longer afford their lifestyle. Well, you can swoop in and do a sub two and keep them out of foreclosure and help their credit. I mean, that's huge. That's like, you know, kind of like saving a life, essentially, because you know how it is once you have bad credit and, you know, things start swirling around and there's a lot that goes on. It takes away your livelihood when you get into trouble. And if we can provide these kind of solutions with creative finance, to me, it's a no-brainer, really.
Mm-hmm. For anybody who's listening who isn't in real estate, describe the term you just mentioned, sub two. What does that mean?
It's basically taking over somebody's mortgage, existing mortgage, and you're just taking it over. And then you get a servicing company to help you with, you know, the process of that. You get a TC on board. And so not only are you solving a problem, but then you're essentially creating jobs for other people too, which is like super cool, because, you know, then how many people are involved? You already have like three people involved. And you know, you'll get your, if you do research on it, you'll get all this stuff that it's illegal and that, you know, it's not. I mean, how many doors does PACE have? It is kind of like the Wild West, because you talk to one attorney and they're like, no way, I won't touch that, or a title company. And then the next one's like, yeah, sure, we do that all the time.
Here's the IRS code for it right here. Yeah, this is how we structure it. Yep.
Yeah. Exactly. So
just before we close, you've mentioned that you're in the sub two mentorship, and you also been in the Gator Method mentorship. Talk a little bit about that. How have those mentorships with PACE Morby contributed to your journey?
Ah, well, that might make me cry. You know, it's not cliche that you really find out who's in your corner when, you know, tough times hit. And all the seasons that I have been with, you know, morphing and evolving into this new life that I have, it has just been so welcoming. It's expected when you are in these mentorships to provide and like give value back. You just don't have people, you know, take. It's about giving. And at any given moment, if you get into trouble and post in one of the private groups, you know, you will have people, let's hop on a call, let's get on a Zoom, let's figure this out. There is always, you know, resources and tools to help you navigate this industry. I mean, PACE himself, you know, answers his own DMs. And I've, you know, even before I was in the mentorships and I'm in, you know, TC and Gator and Sub 2, I would DM him and be like, oh my goodness, this is what's happening now with Northern Michigan. And, you know, it's so comforting and awesome to know that you have like-minded individuals that know the struggles, just like when you're squadding up, doing a code on somebody or bringing out an open heart, you know, surgery patient, you know how important it is to have that, you know, relationship with your fellow coworkers. Well, that's kind of our community. It's just everybody is there to help. I mean, of course, you know, you get your people that might not be as helpful sometimes, but for the most part, like 98% of the people, they're encouraging, they are positive, they understand the struggles because they've been there, and they're willing to help. I mean, I've met some amazing, you know, people, and I know that some of these relationships will, you know, last lifetime. Like I just recently met another Ironman finisher and we had an hour call, and she is in alignment what I'm doing and vice versa. And we're already checking in, you know, talking about doing a sub two relay for Ironman, you know, and that's what this is. It's just like, it's finding, you know, your people, your squad, and you just crush it. And the opportunities too to JV, the joint venture with other people on their deals, and maybe take a chunk of equity or wedge yourself into a transaction, like that happens all the time. And then as you build these relationships and the trust, and it just morphs into something beautiful, and then you just rinse and repeat, and like everybody wins, and everyone I feel like is always rooting for one another. There's not a ton of negativity like in nursing, like the young are getting eaten by the and I think what I like about Sub 2 is there's a good mixture of different people from backgrounds, and you have people in different areas of their journey. I always say in nursing, you need an oak tree, you need a sapling, and you need someone in between, like a pear tree, you know, because you can't have everyone on the same part, and you can get value pretty much from anybody in the community. And that's just what makes it so special. I mean, it sounds like really woo-woo and unicornish, but I mean, it truly is. I mean, it's been the best. I think the best thing that you can do is an invest in yourself as a nurse. As anybody, take the chance to invest in yourself. You're worth it. I think as Christ followers and as nurses, we tend not to invest in ourselves. I have not invested in myself since I've been out of nursing school. Yes, I've done the CEUs, but it's always been for nursing or to scale somebody else or to help somebody else, because I am, you know, I love serving. I love helping, you know, people. But it's a magical thing when you combine all that and you're investing in yourself for the right reasons with the right people. I mean, that's where the magic happens, for sure.
Good stuff. Kimberly, I just want to say heartfelt thank you for joining us today on this episode of Nursing Real Wealth. Your journey, your insights, they've been truly encouraging and inspiring. Hopefully this is meaningful to somebody who's listened.
Agreed. It's been amazing. Thank you for having me. Very honored.
To all of our viewers, we appreciate you tuning in. Remember, Kimberly's story reminds us that there are always new paths to explore. Until next time, have a wonderful day and stay tuned for more engaging discussions right here on Nursing Real Wealth.